Welcome, Sarah, and thanks for joining us, even though through the difficult times. And I'll let you show your work and present your group for now, and then let's discuss later.
Yeah, thank you, Helge, for the very nice introduction and the welcoming. I'm very happy to have the chance to present my research here. Of course, it would have been nice if I could have been on site in Konstanz and meet you all personally, but perhaps we can postpone a personal meeting to the post-corona time. So having said this, there is actually a high thematic fit between the current situation in which we all find ourselves and the topic of my presentation, which is on COVID norms, monitoring and analyzing preventive behavior. So in my presentation, I will introduce the concept of social norms very briefly and elaborate on the potential of the concept, measures. I will present previous research that we have conducted before the project, but also focusing on the role of social norms with regard on health protection. Last, I will present the theoretical framework, our methodological approach, and the expected results. So, to give you a very first illustration on the impact of social norms, I would like you to show you this video, and I hope that you also hear it. Let's try it.
The gentleman in the elevator now is a candid star. These folks who are entering, the man with the white shirt, the lady with the trench coat, and subsequently one other member of our staff, will face the rear. And you'll see how this man in the trench coat tries to maintain his individuality, but little by little, he looks as if really making an excuse for a little bit more. Now we'll try it once again. Here's the candid subject. Here comes the candid camera staff. Three of them at least. And man has apparently been in...
So actually, I think this video is the most funny and impressively way to illustrate the role of social influence. But more concretely, what I am talking about, what are social norms? So there are various definitions of social norms, and the most common ground is that social norms are rules shared by the members of the same group or society, and that already implies that social norms are directly linked to groups, and that these groups can be rather small group of the direct social environment, but also more distant groups on more abstract levels like whole societies or cultures. And these social norms in these groups are sought to socially regulate behaviors because they indicate what most others in these groups do and what they approve of. And to gain a more differentiated understanding of norms, it is required to differentiate them with regard to descriptive and injunctive norms and collective and perceived norms. So descriptive norms refer to the prevalence of a behavior within the relevant group, and they indicate what is done in this group. And they are sought to influence behavior because of people's motivations to do the right thing. So their impact is actually an information-based influence. On the other hand, we have injunctive norms, and they refer to the social approval of a behavior within the reference group. they indicate what ought to be done. And they are said to be influential because of a people's motivation for affiliation with others. And these different components of norm can be differentiated with regard to whether they are perceived norms and are located on the individual level, or whether they are collective norms that pertain to the group level. So the idea of perceived norms is that, or perceived norms actually refer to the perceptions of individuals about the group's behavior and the group's social approval of the behavior. And most behavioral theories, like the theory of planned behavior, for example, actually refer to these kind of normative perceptions. And the idea of collective norms is that the actual group's behavior and the actual approval of their behavior is should be considered in addition to these normative perceptions, and these attributes actually lie on the group level. In a study that I've conducted together with my colleagues from the Hannover University, where we examined the risk behavior of young drivers, we actually found that beyond these normative perceptions of young drivers, what their peers do and what they approve, the actual behavior, the actual risk behavior, and the actual approval of the risk behavior had an impact on the young driver's risk behavior. So this indicates that it's important to consider both the individual perceptions, but also the actual behavior and the actual approval within the social groups. So why I am talking about these norms? The idea is that norms have a huge potential to explain and to understand, but also to influence compliance with health protective behaviors during a pandemic. So in contrast to laws which regulate behavior through legal norms, social norms regulate compliance with protective behavior socially. And as we know that there is already some protest and resistance against some public health measures because people perceive that they are limited in their individual freedom, these norms or the establishment of norms might be the most effective way to establish health protective behaviors in the population, especially in Western democracies. That is the first point why I think that social norms have a huge potential during a pandemic. The second point is that most of the public health measures, or the effectiveness of these public health measures, actually depend on the widespread adoption and compliance with them. And that applies to social distancing, but also to wearing face masks and digital contact tracing. Having this potential of social norms in mind, we started two studies on health protection behaviors in the first half of the year. And the first study was on social distancing, and the second one on using the contact and the contact tracing app. So social distancing was introduced in Switzerland on March, together with the institution of the lockdown. And social distancing refers to keeping a physical distance of at least 1.5 or 2 meters. Actually, in Switzerland, it was keeping a distance of 2 meters. To understand compliance with social distancing, we developed the SEND model. And the SEND model integrates communication, efficacy, norms, and threat, which together make up the SEND. So the starting point of our model is the vital role of communication during a disease outbreak such as COVID-19. So the idea is that public perception that refer to efficacy perceptions of the preventive behavior, but also to social norms and to threat perceptions related to COVID-19, that these perceptions heavily depends on communication. And this holds especially true at the beginning of a disease outbreak when only a small share of the population has first-hand experiences with the disease. And communication is the primary source of information regarding various dimensions of the health risk. So the basic idea is that these different phases of communication, like news media communication, social media communication, personal communication, affect the behavior-related and disease-related perceptions, among them the normative perceptions, and that these perceptions in turn have an impact on compliance with social distancing. So to test our theoretical model, we conducted an online survey based on an online access panel in the German-speaking part of Switzerland. The sample was curated for age, gender, and residential region. And as I've already mentioned, we have conducted the survey right after lockdown, the first week after the lockdown in Switzerland. So we had 1,005 respondents, and based on this sample, we conducted or we performed a structural equation model with the R package Lervan, and we controlled for age and gender. And as you can see, the fit of the model is actually quite good. These are the results in a more abstract level, but what you can see here is that the SENT model was able to explain about 50% of social distancing, and that perceptions of efficacy norms and threat actually had an impact on health and protective behavior, so on social distancing in this case. However, what we find more interesting from the social norms perspective is that social norms was first an important driver of health protective behavior, but second, are also susceptible to communicative influences, as you can see here. So news media communication, social media communication, and personal communication actually affect the individual's perceptions about the prevalence of social distancing, but also about the social approval of social distancing. And what is very interesting here is that you can see that news media communication had a positive impact, and social media communication, which is indicated here through the red lines, had a negative impact, meaning that the more the people turn to social media communication and the first phase after the lockdown, the less they perceived that social distancing was actually a prevalent behavior and a socially approved behavior by others. So these results indicate that norms are first an important driver of behavior, and second, that they are kind of communicative phenomena that are influenced by communication, which is actually, as communication scientists, this is what we are really interested in. So these are the results with regard to social distancing. And as I've already mentioned, we performed a second study on contact tracing, on the use of the contact tracing app in June. So the contact tracing app was introduced by the end of June in Switzerland. And the idea in this study was to consider that the adoption of contact or that contact tracing apps are both digital technologies but also health protection measures. And that is why we developed a kind of integrative framework and referred to different research traditions and their concepts. So More concretely, we refer to the technology acceptance research and integrated perceived usefulness and perceived ease of use of the technology of the contact tracing app as an important predictor of the adoption of the app. We also refer to the health protection research, which indicates that threat perceptions are important drivers. So in this case, we not only integrated the threat of COVID-19, but we also acknowledge that there is public debate about data misuse, and that is integrated threat misuse in our model. Refer to social norms research and differentiate and injunctive norms, and here also consider that these normative perceptions can refer to the social environment, to the direct social environment, but also to the population in general. So we conducted a two-wave online survey based on an access panel in Switzerland, and the first wave was realized directly after the release of the contact tracing app by the end of July. Here we used a stratified sample quoted for age, gender, and language region. Here we considered the whole Switzerland and also quoted therefore for the German, French, and Italian language region. The second wave was conducted about 10 weeks later in September, and 81% of the participants who participated in the first wave also participated in the second wave of the survey. So the idea here was to better understand the motivations of those people who have not been early adopters. Though that means those people who haven't yet used the app at the first time of data collection, 1 week after the release. So we focused on these non-adopters to better understand what influences their decision process. So the whole analysis is based on this subsample of 454 at the first time point and 360 people at the second time point. Again, we used a structural equation model modeling within the R package Laravel, and you can see that the fit of the model is good. So with regard to the results, this is a big and not so nice model, I have to admit, but it includes the most important information. So what we can see is that perceived usefulness and perceived ease of use of the contact tracing app actually are the most important predictors of the intention to adopt the app. We also found that threat to COVID-19 had an impact on the intention to adopt the app at the first time point. And we can also see that the severity of data misuse, so the perceived seriousness when the data actually is misused, has a negative impact on the intention. So, but again, what we here find most interesting is the role of social norms in this framework. And what we can see is that the descriptive norm of the population actually had an impact on the perceived usefulness of the app. And this is in line with the widely held view in social norms research that the influence of descriptive norms is actually an information-based influence. So the descriptive norm here informs about what others do, what the whole population does, and what will likely be an effective action. And this is a highly relevant information for the assessment of the usefulness of the contact tracing app, as its effectiveness actually fundamentally depends on the widespread adoption in the population. What we can also see that the injunctive norm of the social environment has an two-sided impact. First, on the perceived usefulness, but also directly on the intention to use the app. So the social environment is actually the group of people that people identify with and that they trust. So the trust component might be the central reason for social environment's injunctive norms to influence the usefulness perception. So individuals might think that if the members of their own social circle are in favor of the use of the app, the tracing app must be an effective measure. The influence of the social environment's injunctive norm on ad adoption or on the intention to adopt the app can be explained by people's motivations for affiliations with others. So as individuals identify with members of their social environment and want to be part of their group, they follow their perceptions that this is a socially approved behavior within the group. So to summarize, the learning of our previous research are that first, perceived social norms are an important driver of individual health preventive behavior, and that beyond this, these normative perceptions are shaped through communications, through different forms of communications, as indicated in our first study on social distancing. So news media communication, social media communication, and personal communication actually affect our normative perceptions. So inspired and informed by these findings, we set up our project COVID norms. And as it's indicated here, it's not only me who's conducting this project. We have a huge team. We are six people who are on this, working on this project. The project is funded by the Swiss National Science Foundation within the National Research Program COVID-19. And it has started in September and will run over 2 years. And the project is fundamentally based on the differentiation between collective norms and perceived norms, to bridge the different levels, to bridge the individual level and the population level, and to understand the development of norms. So more concretely, the theoretical framework of our project differentiates between collective norms as the prevailing preventive behaviors and mediated norms as the representation of health protection measures and the behaviors in the media, and the perceived norms at the individual level. So the perceptions of individuals about what others do and what they appreciate. And the basic ideas that health protection measures and their compliance with health protective measures in the population are represented and discussed in the media, in news media, but also in social media. And that these mediated norms have an impact on what we perceive as a widespread and socially approved behavior. And there are different media effect theories that indicate that this is actually, that there's such an impact of media messages on normative perceptions, like the cultivation theory, for example, but also social cognitive theory. So beside the media effects, we assume that normative perceptions are also affected by social learning processes. So, and we assume that people learn, observe and learn in direct social interactions with others what they appreciate and what they do. And these normative perceptions in turn that are affected by media effects and social learning processes have an impact on individual behavior, individual attitudes. And this is basically the idea of most behavioral theories, like the theory of planned behavior, for example. So the idea is that individuals apply or adapt their own behavior to what they perceive as being socially approved and being a widespread behavior in social reference groups. So the individual behavior and attitudes in turn are in aggregate the collective norms. So with this framework, we can theoretically describe how norms about preventive behaviors develop in a population, in a society. So having this framework in mind, our research question is, how do social norms of preventive behavior develop in Switzerland during the COVID-19 pandemic? And the aim is to understand long-term dynamics, but also more short-term dynamics like social learning processes and direct social interactions. The second important aim is to translate these scientific insights into evidence-based guidance for monitoring and influencing norms of preventive behavior. And that is why we closely collaborate with the Federal Office of Public Health in Switzerland in this project. To address these long-term dynamics and the rather short-term dynamics, we apply different methods. For the long-term investigation, we run a weekly trend survey that has already started with the beginning of September, and that will run over the course of 16 months. So every week we ask a sample, a quoted sample of about 425 Swiss about their protection behaviors and about their attitudes towards these protection behaviors, like wearing a face mask, social distancing, and using the tracing app. And we combine these weekly trend survey with a large-scale semi-automated content analysis to analyze the news media and social media, and also to cover the mediated norms. So the idea is that with a weekly trend survey, we can cover the collective norms in the population that refer to the actual compliance with health protective measures and the attitudes, but also we ask for the normative perceptions. And with the content analysis, we can cover the mediated norms over a long term. To address the possible short-term dynamics, we will also conduct a cross-sectional survey at the beginning of the next year. And there we will include a daily mobile experience sampling. So the idea is to use a sub-sample of the overall sample of our cross-sectional survey of about 200 people to learn more about their daily experiences by sending them over the course of 4 weeks daily messages with short questions about their daily experiences and their observations and their social environment with regard to wearing a face mask, for example. I would like to present you the first results that we have gained based on our already started weekly trend survey and based on the content analysis. So what you can see here is or the idea behind this long-term investigation is to have a monitoring of acceptance and media coverage of preventive behavior in Switzerland. And I'm sorry that this is in German, but this is due to time limits and we haven't already translated our findings in English. But what this shows is actually the percentage of Swiss who approve of different health protection behaviors like wearing a face mask, social distancing, and using the Swiss COVID app. And what you can see here is the results of the first seven trend surveys, of the first seven surveys that we have conducted since the beginning of September. And you see that the social approval, the acceptance of these health preventive measures increase over the time, which is of course due to the increasing numbers of infections. In parallel to these results of our survey, we also have figures on the first results of our content analysis. And these are displayed here. Here you can see again, we have the amount of media coverage with regard to this to different health preventive behaviors like the tracing app, wearing a face mask, social distancing, and also vaccination. And again, you can see, especially with regard to wearing a face mask, that there is a little increase. So these are the first presentations of our results. So the idea is to add further data, like secondary data, for example, COVID infection cases, but also to integrate information on events and new regulations with regard to health preventive measures. And in the end, this is rather a descriptive presentation of our data, but in the end, the idea is to do time series analysis to really understand the mutual influences between normative perceptions, collective norms, and the presentation or representation of these health protection measures in the media. But thus far, this is how our results are also presented on our website, covidnorms.ch. I've noted that this site is still under construction because it's not already translated into English. And as I've already said, we want to include further information in our figures. But if you're interested, you can have already a first look at this website. So the idea is of this website that our findings are presented in a way that is also understandable for lay person, but also especially for health authorities. So as I've already mentioned, we work closely together with the Federal Office of Public Health, and the idea is that our results presented on the website can serve as a kind of monitor for the Federal Office of Public Health and can inform further communication strategies, for example. Last, I would like to present you the whole team that is working on this project. The project is realized in cooperation between the Department of Communication and Media Research at the University of Zurich and the Research Center of the Public Sphere and Society, which is also linked to the University of Zurich. As I've already said, we are six people in sum, and there are you could say two teams. The first team consists of Thomas Riemer, Claudia Pucciolini, and me, and we are in charge of the survey. And the second team consists of Mark Eisenegger, Daniel Vogler, and Franziska Oehmer, and they are the experts for the content analysis. Yes, and so I am already at the end of the presentation, and I want to thank you for your attention, and I actually look forward to the discussion and to your feedback. Many thanks.
In the first study you presented, with your scent model, I wondered how you assessed the communication. So was it perceived communication by the individuals, or was it... can you elaborate on the details what you assessed there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so actually we asked the people how relevant the different sources of information were for them, and we asked about different media outlets that we combined to indices and indicating or representing mass media communication, social media communication, and then personal communication in the end. Yeah, but it was also part of the survey, and it's a kind of information of the people themselves.
Okay, so yeah, I guess that makes sense. And, So you did just cluster then the sources of the information, basically. So you're saying, well, I use all my information from Facebook or WhatsApp. Yeah.
Exactly. And so the idea in our project is to integrate content analysis data so based on this information, which kind of media the people use, we can integrate to which content they were exposed mm-hmm. when we have the content analysis data. So the idea is to integrate this kind of data on the individual level and to see what have they really seen, what are their perceptions, and what actually impacted their compliance with health protection measures.
Yeah, so how do you deal with the social media data? Since I am, for instance, WhatsApp messages or Telegram mm-hmm. Messages that may be problematic, may not be accessible to your content analysis.
Yeah, so with regard to the content analysis, we can only cover actually Twitter data when it comes to social media. So news media is quite easy to assess. So we will cover a broad range of media outlets in Switzerland, also for the different language regions. But when it comes to social media, we can only cover Twitter thus far.
Okay.
But you're totally right. This is only a little part of the whole social media.
Yeah, I mean, as you indicated in your analysis, maybe specifically problematic what they receive from those sources. That's why I just wondered as to how far you can assess it. I mean, you can still assess the personal side of, so the perception side of things there.
Mm-hmm.
Another question I had was, so you talked basically about assessment and understanding of how the norms work, but I haven't really heard you talking about any intervention ideas, how to change or use your knowledge to change communication. You hinted at this a little bit right at the end when you said you're in contact with the official health communication that they can adjust, but do you have any ideas how your results could help them informing their communication strategies, or how your research will actually then influence what people think others are doing or what they're mm-hmm. doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is actually a good question, as this is a very important aim of our project. So the second big aim is to translate our scientific insights into guidance. And I think that this is actually a huge challenge, and we are planning two workshops together with the Federal Office of Public Health to think about our results and to think about the implications. But what we can, so what I can already say is that when we can learn, or when if we learn that normative perceptions are an important driver of health protection behavior, then it might be, for example, a good approach to include normative messages in the communication strategies, like the most part, you could name a concrete number, is actually using the contact tracing app in its favor, and is in favor of the contact tracing app. So do like them and use the tracing app, for example. But as our project is not only limited to normative perceptions, we also monitor the actual behavior and the actual attitudes towards, and this is already, I think, an important information for health authorities with regard to with regard to how much the people actually comply, and whether it needs further communication efforts to increase the compliance.
And Yes, you showed data. I mean, you're welcome to join in the discussion. It's not a dialogue, so you're welcome to add if you have anything. So hi, Martin.
Hi. Am I allowed to ask a question right now?
Sure.
Okay. So first of all, thanks for the interesting and very relevant talk. So I'm also interested on communication effects on health behavior and risk perception. Mm-hmm. And I would be interested in the communication part in your model. Mm-hmm. So I think it's clear that communication can have both positive and negative effects on, mm-hmm. on risk perception and intentions here. And do you consider that in your model in some way, that we have, for example, fake news or negative information on how COVID is spread?
Mm-hmm. That is actually a result in the first study on social distancing. There we found that social media, using social media or turning to social media had a negative impact on a normative perception. So the more the people turn to social media content, the less they perceive that social distancing is a socially approved and widespread behavior by others. So this already indicates that communication has not always a positive enforcing impact, but also can have a negative impact when it comes to compliance. And so the idea is that we can learn more about what is actually discussed on social media, like on Twitter, and by our content analysis, because we can only assume here or speculate that it might have been negative content on social media that is the cause of these negative impact. So with regard to fake news, so the idea would be to do sentiment analysis with the Twitter data. So we can see are the health protection measures rather positively or rather negatively discussed on Twitter. But our approach is not to cover or to identify fake news, actually, because I think that would be really difficult on an automatic-based approach. But I think that it would be an important step. Yes.
And would it be possible to include maybe pro and con social media in your model? So mm-hmm. that you also have a content analysis on the the positiveness or the negativeness of the mm-hmm. media that the people read.
Yeah, that is actually the idea behind the sentiment analysis. So the sentiment analysis can identify whether a certain content is rather positively or rather negatively discussed by identifying certain words identifying words that are generally used in a positive or a negative context. So we can actually identify a positive or negative framing, if you want to say it like this, of different health protection measures with the sentiment analysis.
So can I follow up? Well, maybe. Last one, sorry. As you said, when people turn to social media, then this had a negative influence on their descriptive and injunctive norms. And is it also possible from your model to rank maybe the influences? So you have these influences of news media or official media maybe, and the social media influence, because there is work there that implicates that user-generated content with respect to health communication might be even more powerful than official public service announcements, for example. So could you comment on that?
So actually, I haven't included the coefficients in this model, but these results don't indicate that social media's had a greater impact on normative perceptions compared to news media. Okay. And it was rather news media which was the most important source, but we have to consider the context of the survey. So this was at the very beginning of the coronavirus outbreak. And I think in this phase, the official, the news media, the mass media played a very important role because the people had to rely on this kind of media. They hadn't first-hand experiences, and they had to be informed about the next steps, about the health protection measures, and that is why the mass media, the news media, had such a great impact in this phase. It might be that this will develop differently with regard or in line with or in accordance with the development of the pandemic in general, and that social media might get more important, but I don't know. So that is actually something that we want to examine with our project. So with our project, we want to understand the different roles of different media content in a long-term perspective with regard to disease and health-related perceptions and actual compliance with health protection measures.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for joining in. So I have also a related question. Do you have any indication now that the media sentiment of both the Twitter analysis that you have conducted and the news media, is it reflective of the actual behavior you assessed in your representative sample, or is it overrepresenting critical voices, so trying to balance voices, so to say, from the content analysis? So I could imagine that it could be either or the other, and it could have that negative impact on the perceptions of norms if basically they overrepresent a slim minority that is against, let's say, wearing face masks, just for the sake of balancing the news report.
Mm-hmm.
So have you any indication how the frequencies match up or mm-hmm. not yet?
So not yet, because we have just 7 time points of data, and we have analyzed our data first in a very with a very descriptive approach. So what we have thus far is these figures presenting the percentage of acceptance and compliance. But the idea would be with when we have more time points to conduct time series analysis and actually to understand whether there are influences between media coverage, between news media coverage of public health measures, social media coverage of public health measures, and the acceptance in the public in the population with regard to the health measures. But this would be the next step when we have more data and then we have more time, time points of data collection, we can do such analysis to understand these mutual influences. But thus far, we only have 7 weeks and can only provide some descriptive analysis.
Yeah, I just wondered if you would have the descriptors for the sentiment and then compare it to the approval ratings that you presented. Since also that's another question, I'm not sure how you are going to put the collective into your equation. Is it that you assume the collective to be the Swiss national community, so to say? So you have one observation per time point, right? On the aggregate level, on the collective level? Or are you trying to subtype or subgroup? Okay.
Yeah, but in the end, we will have about I think more than 50 or more than 60 time points. So in the end, we will have enough time points to actually analyze relations between these collective norms, between normative perceptions, and also the mediated norms as covered or as assessed by the content analysis.
Okay, so you're doing it by increasing the number of observations, basically.
Yeah. That is the whole idea behind the weekly trend survey. The idea is to gain many data points and to conduct the survey over a long time to gain so much data points that we can run time series analysis, for example.
Okay. Yeah. That's feasible. That sounds good.
Yeah. You will see.
I guess I would also look at the per time point. Look at basically the difference between the representation in the media and in your representative sample. Since you have a representative sample, that's I guess quite interesting and will have communication implications. I mean, also for the perceived side of things, I would assume that the exposure to the media is key there. I mean, I'm not sure how detailed you assess it in your T50 assessment questionnaire, but it could be that they selectively look for articles in the newspaper that are confirmative of their viewpoint to start with. So basically just increasing the their sentiment by filtering out the information that is fitting their views. We did something similar with the with arguments for and against flu vaccinations, and it was really daunting to see that you can prepare the best information that you have available, the most transparent information. People will just use whatever they feel fits their views, also in communication with others. And I think it's really challenging to break the circle and having at least the observation on a national representative sample, I think is quite interesting in that regard as well.
I think that this is really a nice idea, and that is what we will do more precisely with our second with a cross-sectional survey at the beginning of the next year. So there we will ask the people about their own health protection measures, about their normative perceptions, and about their media use very detailed. And based on their indications about their own media use, so to which sources they turn, we can integrate the content analysis data and see how different content actually affect some kind of perceptions and then the compliance with health protection measures. That is something that we cannot do based on our weekly trend survey, because there we don't have information from the people about their media use. So we cannot integrate the data on an individual level.
Yeah, but the problem with the EMA data, so the smartphone data, could be, so I think maybe Martin, you have some experience based from Britta's lab on repeated measurement of risk perception in a high frequency. Maybe similar here. Well, if you assess risk perception, may be the case, but also on the norms, that the perceptions don't change in that high frequency. So you basically assess a flat line with some error noise. If you don't have a good reason to change your perception of things, if you just densely assess it over time. So if I ask you in an hour, what are your norm perceptions about the COVID app? And then I ask you 2 hours later, again, your perceptions probably won't have changed, since you wouldn't have any input why it should change over time. Mm-hmm. So this might be a challenge for your intense longitudinal data sample. So there should be a reason why they should change within mm-hmm. time period. So if you could mm-hmm. prepare it and then observe reactions towards a newly developed vaccine that's on the market at that point, mm-hmm. then you could expect a lot of dynamics. But if you just assess it in a week where nothing mm-hmm. has changed, basically, maybe the reports go a bit up and down per day, but it's not that they change dramatically per day. It's more like a weekly development of waxing and waning, that you may not actually track any dynamic, and then you have problems in dense time analysis. I mean, you will have the data on the news coverage, but then again, the question is how much news did they consume at the time and how much did they transport different sentiments in that weekly assessment. So I think it's a good idea to find a focal time where things are changing, like when a vaccine is published or
So the idea is with a second with a cross-sectional study at the beginning of the next year to cover the intention to get vaccinated, or it highly depends on the development, and that is why I don't fear that we don't have any variances, because our observation thus far and our experience is that this pandemic is very dynamic. And there's so much change during the whole pandemic that I believe that there will be some variance and some dynamics that
I guess it depends really on the time frame. I would think things change weekly, maybe you can argue for it, but there are critical time points where there's more change. And also more discussion in the media on the issue, and I guess that would be a critical time point where this study would be exceptionally well suited to. So when you, let's say, when the vaccine is released or published, it's clear that there's going to be a vaccine, that will be a good time point for daily assessment as well.
So actually I think that is an assumption. So the assumption how dynamic these developments are, and are these rather long-term dynamics, or are there also short-term influences on a more daily or weekly basis? And that is the idea of the a survey at the beginning of the next year, where we will also combine an experience sampling approach over the duration of 4 weeks. So we will cover 4 weeks and try to collect data on a daily basis about the individual's experiences and their everyday environment, to learn more about possible short-term influences. But of course we don't know, and I totally agree that we should consider that we find a point of data collection where there is any kind of development with regard to the behavior we focus on, like the intention to get vaccinated or other.
I mean, it really depends on what happens in the time. I agree with you that it's unforeseeable when certain things happen, like the start of the second wave or the introduction of a vaccine or of treatment or any public reaction that is highly impactful, like the call for lockdowns. I think those, it's more event-based and less time-based. So it's not just the time passing by, but specific events that probably will drive the dynamics. But that will be interesting if you can catch those moments. And a month assessment, I guess, could give you the possibility to catch one or two of those moments.
Yeah. And I can say that these kind of dynamics with regard to different events, that makes it really challenging, this research. So you have really to, so it might be that you set up a survey for the next week and everything changes because the regulations have changed and you have to revise your whole survey questionnaire because it doesn't fit anymore. So
question or comment on that. I mean, in Switzerland you have the same setting as in Germany, that you have the Kantone or the little regions, and you have the data of whole Switzerland, right? So would it maybe be possible to retrospectively look at the data and say, okay, in Canton X, this regulation changed during that time, and then you maybe have covariation in how the perception changed and depending on the regulations, maybe that would be an interesting idea.
Yeah, actually, that is what we're currently doing. We are documenting every change in regulation to have more information for our contextual information for the interpretation of our results. That is a good point. Yeah.
Would be also maybe an idea, depending on how many cantone you have represented, to assess your collective behavior or collective norms, cantone specifics, also the number of observations per time point. So then you can basically say, also you can attach media to certain cantones. Probably have newspapers that are local as well, that you have in your content analysis, and I think this would, I'm not sure how large you so 800.
So for the trends survey, we have a sample of 425 people, and it's quoted for language regions. So in Switzerland, we have three language regions: the French, the German, and the Italian. And I don't think that we have enough cases to also consider every canton, but
you would have the three. I guess that would make it easier for the media analysis as well, since you would language specific news outlets anyhow, to have at least then four per time point. Three, I'm sorry, I forgot the Rito Romanisch. I guess that's
I'm only here since in Switzerland since I think it's 2 years now, and I have to admit that it's it makes soil research really more difficult when you have these different language regions because of representativeness considerations. So it's a crucial factor that you have to consider when you conduct survey data.
So I think that would be an idea. I find this really interesting. So is there any, Miriam, you want?
Yes, I might have a, sorry, I'm putting on my video. I might have a little question regarding the last thing that you said, because of the, you said you have only the different language regions. And I know that in Switzerland, especially the French and the Italian region is more affected by COVID-19 than the German speaking region. So maybe that could be something that you could cluster and look if there are different effects.
Of course, that is really a good point. So, So having this idea in mind, we also collect secondary data like the number of infection cases, that is important to evaluate how affected some region was by COVID-19. That's really, that is important. Thank you. Yeah.
Do you have the download numbers of the app, for instance? So you have some population-wide data you could use for inference of the accuracy of your measurement as well.
Yeah. And I can say, using an online survey to estimate the adoption rate of a of the contact tracing app is not the best method, because it is overestimated in an online survey, because the people who are part of an online survey panel are more, actually seem to have to include more people who use the tracing app.
That's what I expected when I saw this 50% adoption rate.
That is really an overestimation. And we have discussed this at another point. But it's really
overestimation. And maybe problematic for this specific measure. Well, are you also age representative, or? Okay, so it's not that the younger people are overrepresented based on that it's an online survey.
No, it's actually it's quoted for age, gender, and gender, but yeah. So the overestimation should be the same in every age group, but it's still an overestimation. I think that isn't a problem for correlational analysis, but it's a problem for every descriptive, description of our data.
Especially for the collective norms, it will be, if you want to make the case for, since you have a representative sample, or as far as you can get representative samples, make the case for the media overrepresents a certain sentiment compared to the population, then I guess it's essential to have a representative sample to make this case. And then you cannot make this well, but you have the other data for the COVID app that is objective. To make this case as well, or see how as to how far the coverage is reflective of that.
I totally agree. So a more correct statement would be that we collect data that is quoted for age, gender, and thus strives for representativeness in these variables for the online users in Switzerland. That would be more so appropriate.
People, which is how many people are online in Switzerland?
I think it's, I don't have a number in mind. It must be more than 80-90%, but I'm not sure.